listen, we want the crowd loud. Fist pumping, rhythm is hitting. We want to make it clear, we ain't scared. This is the vision we want.
Welcome to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff in studio with Peter Phillips. Today's program, we talk with Jeff Mackler and Mickey Z about moving from Occupy to a post-capitalist world, while noting the many challenges along the way. Please stay with us.
It's a dirty game, maintain my reign for capital gain. But my people getting tired of the pain and the shame. We're not commodities or cars that turn the global economy. We're the promise of a legacy, a spirit we're honoring. An anomaly to those who can't imagine a world without oppressive forces, slaving for a mighty dollar bill.
You're listening to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff in studio with Peter Phillips. Today we're going to be talking about the Occupy movement and what has happened with the Occupy movement. And we have two wonderful guests, Jeff Mackler and Mickey Z. They're going to talk about that throughout the hour. So today we're focusing again on after Occupy, looking at a post-capitalist world. Here is Peter to introduce our first guest. Peter?
Jeff Mackler is the National Secretary of Socialist Action, a lifelong anti-war and social justice activist. He's Administrative Committee for the United National Anti-War Coalition. He's a Director of Mobilization of Free Mumia Abu-Jamal, National Secretary of Socialist Action. Jeff, welcome.
Glad to be with you.
You have a topic called The Alternative to Capitalism, and you're going to be speaking in the Bay Area on this over the next few weeks and probably have been for a while. So what's your main theme here?
Well, I had a choice. I could have put How to Make a Socialist Revolution on the title, but I chickened out, and I simply said The Alternative to Capitalism, The Alternative to Global Warming, Environmental Destruction, Overt, Covert, and Drone Wars, All-Pervasive Government Surveillance, Ferguson-Style Racism and Militarization of the Police, Multi-Trillion Dollar Corporate Bailouts, Trillions in Social Cutbacks, Women and LGBT Depression, Mass Deportation, War on Terror, Persecution of Muslim Communities, and the Rule of the 1%. Of course, that has nothing to do with socialism, as you know. But my basic thesis is that all of the evils that so many listeners are fully aware of are not accidents, and they're not products of individual politicians, are not even products of billionaires who fund the elections to the tune of this time $600 million or $800 million. The last election was $4 billion to convince the American public that Tweedledee was better than Tweedledum. So in my view, the solution is a socialist society, and I'm going to be talking about how to create and build and bring into being a socialist society in the United States.
Or as the folk singer Ani DeFranco says, Tweedledum and Tweedledummer.
Exactly. Well said.
Well, Jeff Mackler, tell us about this, then. Tell us about how we get here, the socialist society, the post-capitalist society. How would you like to describe this, and how do we do this?
Well, socialism is the rule of the majority. It's the rule of the mass of the oppressed people, working people, women, blacks, and all others who are victims of capitalism. I have to say that the history of the planet Earth indicates that no previous ruling class, that is the American capitalist class or every monarchy or slavocracy that existed before it, has ever voluntarily said, okay, I agree that we are an unjust society, we poison the planet, we threaten the extinction of the planet Earth, and we're going to change our ways. We're going to do good for once for humanity. It just hasn't happened. We have wars under Democrats and Republicans. We have wars all over the world, and they're all over the maintenance of the capitalist system and its right to oppress and exploit poorer people and its own working class. So I'm going to be telling people about how to organize a society that literally replaces, and you notice I use a gentle word there, didn't say overthrow capitalism, but that's what we're really talking about. How can you build a mass movement? And in order to envision that, you have to imagine a truly massive movement in the United States led by conscious revolutionaries who carry within them, with their ideas, with their persons, with their history, the lessons of all previous struggles of humanity on how to change society. And the fundamental lesson is you have to organize the vast majority to challenge the state power. And that state power includes the military, the police, the judicial system, the legislative system, and all other institutions that are beholden to, in fact, institutionalize the power of the capitalist class. So we are envisioning a society where we can win over the army, that is, the victims of the economic draft, the young people, mostly poor, who are forced to go into the army because the society doesn't provide them with an opportunity. I don't think we'll ever win over the police. That's not in our program. But we're talking about a mass movement in the millions and tens of millions. And that means a revolutionary group with a conscious program that is deeply integrated into all of the struggles of the oppressed. Everywhere where capitalism oppresses people, we have to be there, and we have to seek to unify all of these movements into a common struggle to seize the power of the state, and for the first time in the modern era, begin to build a society where the majority, literally the majority of the people, rule in their own name in order to advance their own interests and not the profits of the 1%.
Wow, okay, that's quite a statement. And when you say socialist action and majority rule, you're talking really about a very democratic process.
Exactly. Socialist Action, my party, is a small party in the hundreds. And we seek to collaborate in united front activities with all other social movements and socialist groups when we can. It's our experience that when the iron gets hot and people are in struggle, the tiny debates or important debates that go on among small groups of socialists tend to be subordinated to those who can demonstrate that they have deep roots in the masses, that they can change society. And then you'll see a process of the unification of small socialist groups in combination with millions of working people at the point of production, in the communities, among every oppressed group, joining a mass upsurge to challenge the state itself, to close it down, and not only close it down like Occupy sought to do, but replace it fundamentally. This envisions a disintegration of the old state as the tiny minority realizes they have no support in the general population. And that requires a high degree of organization.
Well, the two themes we're going to be talking about is the Occupy movement, which did become a national movement and was infiltrated by the national security state literally at every small group across the country. They were worried that this could get out of hand and get too big. And also the idea that capitalism itself is facing crisis in sense of capital concentration, environmental impacts. I mean, so there could be major catastrophes emerging here that will require citizen action at a very mass level to try to make those kinds of transformations. So you envision that happening? Are you organizing to help make that happen? Or will there be a mass movement and various social networks, socialist networks, will help step in and be a vanguard?
Well, Marx, that's Karl, said that capitalism creates its own gravediggers, a working class. And by its very existence, as we said, the way it functions, the prison industrial complex, mass incarceration, the first in the world, the highest rate, impoverization, austerity programs, it creates in the masses a great anger. And as you said, the national security state and all of its institutions, including the Democratic and even the Republican Party, and the judicial system and the NGO system in general, are all organized and orchestrated in order to challenge the discontent that comes out of the system itself into safe channels. If you want to change the world, vote for one of the other capitalist parties. Billions of dollars are spent in the educational system, in the media, and everywhere else to convince people that we have to vote for the lesser evil. And that is the norm. Or we have to join an NGO that is a corporate-funded organization that draws into it some of the best militants in order to reform the Democratic Party, in order to foster, quote, progressive Democrats, in order to bring into being open-minded leaders and so on. Each of the institutions of capitalism today, including the false flag wars, the idea that Syria had sarin gas or that the Vietnamese started the Vietnam War that killed 4 million people because supposedly a Vietnamese sampan fired on an American destroyer, leading to the Tonkin Resolution that started a 10-year war. Or remember the Maine, or all of the other pretexts that capitalism uses to deflect the anger of the masses into safe channels.
WMDs.
That's right. Weapons of mass destruction is the classic example. Here you literally have the President of the United States says, okay, George Bush, we haven't found any weapons of mass destruction. We've tried real hard. But in any case, we're here, so we might as well institute a democratic system. By democratic, it meant one that is controlled by the United States in order to exploit the resources of the Iraqi nation, which, by the way, the continued exploitation in all of these oil wars over the very fossil fuel whose continued use spells doom for humanity is a central expose in and of itself. Here we fight massive wars in Libya, in Syria, in Egypt, and everywhere else over fundamental resources whose continued use spells doom for humanity, and there is no comment on it. The Obama administration has just said that we are going to expand East Coast offshore drilling. If I were to ask you, Mickey and Peter, who is the largest oil owner in the United States, I bet you couldn't answer it. The real answer is not Chevron or Mobil or any of the others, but it's the United States government. The United States government owns and controls all of the offshore oil, which is a majority, not to mention the oil on public lands, and leases it out to corporations at virtually nothing and pays a royalty of nickels and dimes in relation to billions of dollars of profits. So this system can't function without a government that defends the oil industries, the corporate elite, the six oil corporations that essentially rule the world.
And six corporations that control 90% of the media. These are groups that all seem to work together. And you're listening to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff. That was the voice of Jeff Mackler, who is with us for the hour today as we talk about post-capitalism. We'll be talking about Occupy. I would like now to move into our discussion with our next guest. Our next guest is Mickey Z, born and raised in Astoria, Queens. Mickey Z is the only person on the planet to have appeared in both a political book with Howard Zinn and a karate flick with Billy Tybo Blanks. Armed with a high school diploma, Mickey has spoken and lectured in venues ranging from MIT to ABC, No Rio, from Yale University to Occupy Free University. The author of 12 books, most recently, Occupy This Book from Sullivan Street Press. Mickey Z, it is an honor to welcome you back to the Project Censored Show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Fantastic. It's always great to have another Mickey on the show. We've got the Left Coast Mickey, the East Coast Mickey. Cindy Sheehan wrote the foreword to Mickey Z's new book. And in it, I think she encapsulates the theme that Mickey Z is trying to get at in his new book on Occupy. Occupy This Book about activism. Henry David Thoreau said, "A truly good book teaches me better than to read it. I must soon lay it down and commence living on its hint. What I began by reading, I must finish by acting." And that is Mickey Z in a nutshell. He definitely is someone that practices what he preaches. Mickey Z, are you back with us?
I'm back.
Tell me about the book. I just talked about Henry David Thoreau quote from Cindy Sheehan in the beginning. What's up with Occupy This Book?
It's a book that's a combination of sort of a how-to book and a bit of a memoir of sorts of what I've learned over the years of doing activism and interacting with a wide range of movement. And I guess ultimately the goal would be to inspire people with a sense of urgency, because we really need to be moving quickly on a wide range of issues, and a sense of solidarity, because one of the most common reasons why I see movements come and go is ego and inability to create coalitions and so on. And it's really, really crucial that we begin to move past that and broaden the movement.
Vicky, Occupy, the movement itself, gets dismissed often in corporate media as, well, didn't have any leaders and nobody knew what they were saying. But they certainly scared the national security state and the upper class, who went about infiltrating literally every group that organized around the country and repressed. So what is your idea of seeing something along those lines again?
Oh, I think it's already happening in the Black Lives Matter movement, where people are beginning to realize that the movements that are going to have broader appeal to more activists and potentially more results are those that are more intersectionalist, ones that recognize where struggles against oppression intersect and connect with other people, and try not to have the usual suspects being the leaders or any leaders at all. So I think Occupy Wall Street, as a group of individuals that I personally knew here in New York City, sure, a lot of those individuals have scattered and done other stuff. You can go to Zuccotti Park and there'll be nobody there. That doesn't mean Occupy didn't have an impact. It pointed activists in a direction, and I think that people are building on that in more powerful ways since then. And movements that connect all the issues, going all the way back to, say, That Week in Seattle in 1999, those movements are the ones that can create change. And you know we're connecting issues when you see that level of repression, because it, like you said, it scares the 1%.
Mickey Z, you lay out Occupy, this book, the table of contents. It's actually quite inviting, I think, when people see this. It's a list, really a list of questions you have, and you go through, and one of them, of course, is talking about Occupy. Well, what were your demands and these types of things? There's another interesting point in here. You also say activism is more than a word, and of course, of what you're laying out here is activism is a path people choose when seeking social change. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Years ago, I was inspired by something I heard Ralph Nader say, in which he talked about Americans creating something that he called civic time, where they took time away from the TV or whatever is the distractions that are put out there for us, and dedicate X amount of time to creating a better society and a more just world. And when I look at the concept of activism, it will not succeed if it's a permanent march on a Saturday when more people are off from work, and then afterwards everybody goes home and you coordinate the march route with the local cop. I'm not saying that never has any effect, and it is a great opportunity for outreach. But when people adopt activism as a way of life, as something that is ingrained and interwoven into their daily activities, that's where we really, really have a chance to broaden the movement, to reach more people, and to create social change. So I think that it's really important that people don't look at activism as holding a sign one afternoon and then it's done. It's as much a commitment as any other aspect of your life, you know. And in this book, that's something that I've learned personally, and what I try and do in the book is share these lessons, not saying that they are the ultimate lessons. And one of the reasons why I shape the table of contents as questions is because that's my goal, is to inspire more questions and learn from them. So yeah, I think activism can be such an invigorating choice to make. It's not a negative choice. It's not seeing only the bad. It's having the belief that we can be better. And who can't get behind that?
Mickey Z, I know you're going to have fun answering this one. What do you say to those who think activists should just, quote, get a job?
Well, yeah.
That is your job.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many ways to answer that question. And, you know, one of the most absolutely fundamental basic answers to that question is you'll turn around and say, how do you know we don't have jobs? You know, people are able to juggle amazing things. It's like if you see someone waiting online overnight to get the latest iPhone, or waiting online to get tickets to the big football game, you don't assume that they don't have a job. That's something else that they do with their life. So many, many, many activists, myself included, juggle to the best of their ability to make enough money to survive in a capitalist society, and to also fulfill your obligation as a fellow earthling and get out there and fight for justice. But I think it's also incredibly, incredibly telling that people use that as this ultimate put down, because it demonstrates how we live in a society where your value is considered whether or not you have what's considered a good job. And of course, what is a good job? You know, it's going to be something that contributes to the machine. And if we're out there protesting for justice, there's a chance that's because we lost our job and because there's economic inequality. And so it kind of is missing the point, saying get a job. Well, maybe I want one, but I can't find one, so I'm out here struggling. So there's so many other ways to address that. But I think what I find is that individuals have a little bit of a sense that they see people out protesting, and I think on some level they feel a little guilty. They want to get involved. So it's easier if they dismiss activists as someone that's lazy, without a job, and so on, then it's easier in their mind to make sense of as to why they're not fighting. But when you do this consistently, and that was one of the benefits of Zuccotti Park, being there day in and day out, start to have conversations. Conversations is where perceptions change. And that's what I mean about making this a lifestyle, talking about these type of social changes every chance you get in your daily life, because it's harder to dismiss somebody in that setting. Walking past them on the street while they're holding the sign, the way our culture is, yes, it's a little easier to dismiss them. When someone is living and breathing this struggle for justice and talk about it, and it's someone that you love and respect that lives on your block, well, then there's a chance that you can change perceptions, and they're not going to just flippantly say, get a job.
Mickey Z, your new book, Occupy, this book, is really a great primer on activism. Certainly, I could tell by going through it that it has a lot of your experience helped inform you when putting together this book. It's over 100 pages. Occupy, this book. We'll continue our discussion with Mickey Z and Jeff Mackler after this musical break. Stay with us. You're listening to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. Today's program, we're moving from Occupy to a post-capitalist world. We're having a conversation with activists and authors Jeff Mackler and Mickey Z. Mickey Z, let's start this conversation for this part of the program by talking about the sort of some can look at as an extension from Occupy, the Black Lives Matter protests in Ferguson.
I wouldn't think it's an extension of Occupy, but it certainly has used some of their tactics. I mean, here in New York City, I'm very happy to be hearing people mic-checking all the time again. But what is thrilling about Black Lives Matter from my personal experience has been that it has the energy of early Occupy, but it's not primarily white and middle class. And the people of color are the ones making the decisions. They're the ones setting up the march routes. They're the ones setting up the demos. And they're the voices being heard. And it's basically an activist dream come true, because we've all seen movements come and go because the same usual suspects' egos take over and try to co-opt the movement. And what I've been witnessing with Black Lives Matter has been really, really giving voice to oppressed communities and white people appropriately acting as allies. And to me, that's the future of activism right there.
That sounds really important, Mickey Z. And you know, what corporate media has not covered this, other than fairly negatively, Black Lives Matter movement, which has been happening all across the country, even in small cities and towns all over America. Do you have any idea to what extent that's happening and its continuation?
In terms of the media not covering it?
Well, both that and how widely this is happening where it's not being covered, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm happy to say that I have people send me photos and information from demos all across the country, and I get invites on social media, sort of just like in the spirit type of accept the invite from Gainesville, Florida. Wherever it may be, there are people. I mean, this issue is so huge and has been huge for the entire history of this country. To see it reaching the forefront is amazing. In New York City, fascinatingly, the New York Times, of course, it's a condescending, superficial coverage, but they are covering some issues. And one of the most astonishing moments I've ever seen was they covered a march, and there's a group called We Will Not Be Silent that makes these excellent black and white signs. And there was a young black man holding one of their signs that said, "End White Supremacy." It was front and center in the New York Times. And just that moment was almost shocking to see that they chose that image to illustrate this article, whether or not the article, of course, the corporate media didn't cover it accurately. But that image had power that I couldn't believe the photo editor slipped that one in, because it was an amazing choice on their part. So I believe it's happening everywhere because racism is happening everywhere. And as I said before, the most powerful aspect from my perspective as a middle-aged white man is to see my white comrades stepping back and understanding that the best role for all of us is ally.
Well, one of the Project Censored research reports this year had us documenting that over 700 law enforcement-related deaths are happening annually and have been for over a decade. And then in addition to that, there's over 700-800 people who die in local city county jails, usually within the first 2 weeks that they arrive. So we're talking about literally a whole lot of people, many of these people of color. And so this expansion of this work and demonstrations against that are manifestations of every city, every place, every town experiencing these tragic deaths, and in many cases deliberate deaths, by law enforcement. And we think that's really an important process. Let's go over to Jeff Mackler and ask how your organization is dealing with Ferguson in support of these efforts.
Well, of course, we've been involved for literally 2.5 decades in defense of Mumia Abu-Jamal. I'm the national coordinator of Mumia's defense and all political prisoners. And this, of course, is just part of it. Black Lives Matter was brought into existence because of the vicious murder of Michael Brown and Eric Garner in Ferguson in New York, and that and a couple of others that were covered. But the truth is that this kind of police murder, as Peter said, is the norm everywhere. But it goes way beyond that. Today, the United States is number one in the world in regard to the number of people under the jurisdiction of the criminal justice system, and that is some 7.3 million people, half of which, or 3.5 million, are actually in prison. An increasingly privatized, for-profit, near-slave labor prison system with a majority blacks in it. And the Ferguson example is just a public exposure of a system itself which is corrupt and racist to the core and literally benefits, like in the days of slavery, over cheap black labor. And I say cheap because the price of black labor on the average in prisons is 50 cents an hour, with Georgia and Texas paying zero. So the institutionalization of this is what concerns me most. Of course, we have been active in participating in building and supporting the demonstrations all over the country. And we're coming out with a new pamphlet on Ferguson explaining its relationship to the system as a whole. But let me say this, because during our show today, we're going to cover everything from surveillance to Palestine to Black Lives Matter to Snowden to Occupy and so on. Each of these movements, powerful movements, were a reflection of the deep anger and understanding of large numbers of people that something was fundamentally corrupt about the system. The fact that Edward Snowden demonstrated that every person on the planet Earth, if not in the United States, is a victim of government surveillance tells you something. And of course, the corporate media says, well, okay, let's go on to the next issue. And Ferguson and Palestine, the slaughter of 2,000 Palestinians in Gaza, passes on from issue to issue. In my view, the permanence of the movement depends on the capacity of the individual activists to institutionalize these struggles into a broader movement to make it permanent. Like Oscar Grant, for example. We don't talk much about Oscar Grant, and yet we mobilize tens of thousands of people. And the same thing with Alan Bluford. They become momentary examples of the horror of the system, but because the movement has not been able to coalesce a longstanding permanent movement with deep roots in the communities, the issues tend to fade away until what's the next thing we're going to fight. It's the same thing, for example, with the anti-war movement. We fought against the war, the coup in Egypt. We supported the Tahrir Square mobilizations against the war in Syria, against the war in Lebanon, against the slaughter everywhere else, and yet they have another war virtually every minute. That's why I'm a socialist, because we seek to build a broad revolutionary institution that includes all of these struggles and wins the best fighters in them and supports them independently of being socialist. That is, to try to unite all the struggles in common action, include all of the issues, but build a long-standing revolutionary instrument to challenge capitalism itself.
That's the voice of Jeff Mackler. You mentioned Edward Snowden a couple of times there, and sort of the surveillance of these movements, particularly anti-capitalist movements, anti-war movements, social justice movements. Mickey Z, you, in your new book, Occupy, this book, you talk a lot about that kind of activism and what are the demands and how one becomes maybe a more conscious activist, and activism is a way of life. You also in there talk a little bit about surveillance, and you also talk about provocateurs, and that's certainly something that we see in the Black Lives Matter protests here in the Bay Area. We saw California Highway Patrol officers dressed undercover, disrupting things that were happening, and then pulling guns and so forth. You have a part in your new book that you talk about this. Well, you want to address that issue?
Yeah, it was obviously very common in Occupy Wall Street here, and we became quite adept at fishing out the Facebook friend requests, you know, during that time period. But I guess one way that I could connect it to all the issues we've already discussed is that this type of behavior is, as Jeff said, is institutional. Of course the people in power listen in. Of course the police participate in racial profiling and brutality. This is their job. This is what they do. These aren't isolated incidents. Michael Brown, Oscar Grant, these aren't isolated. They are examples of centuries of white supremacy and racism. And the more we can recognize that, then we stand a chance in battling it. And the danger, one of the dangers I see, and I see it in New York City in particular because the NYPD is such a figurehead of law enforcement, is to focus too much on outsmarting or, quote-unquote, beating the cops when the real challenge is to take down the entire system. The cops are just a symptom of the system. And so when the Snowden revelations came out, people that have been following this for years would be, yeah, well, this is what they do. But what it helps for us as experienced activists is that evidence where we can bring people in and say, this is what we've been talking about. Here is the literal proof that the system is not working in our favor and we are being lied to. So it can be used as a powerful tool for education and interaction amongst groups that maybe in the past don't interact. It's not a positive thing, but it's a way of looking at it as a way to unite people, because I find that the most common reason why people don't make the connections is that because that's a mirror of our society. Even, you know, in our society, you talk to middle-class people, and they'll be looking down their nose at someone who allegedly is cheating on welfare or this or that, and they don't want to hear about corporate welfare. They very, very consciously manipulate us to be divided and isolated and alienated. And just because you create an activist movement, whether it be Occupy, whether it be Black Lives Matter, we can't shrug off those decades and centuries of conditioning in a matter of months. So a lot of those same symptoms seep into the activist world. So it's an ongoing battle to create these coalitions and this intersectionality to understand that all the struggles against oppression are connected. And the more that we can recognize the differences between us without assigning privilege to them, the better chance we have to create the type of solidarity and coalitions to bring down the system before it's too late.
That's the voice of Mickey Z, author most recently of Occupy This Book. Mickey Z, can you tell people where they can find out about your book online?
Well, you could basically, if you look up Mickey Z, M-I-C-K-E-Y, last initial Z, you'll find information about my work, in particular Occupy This Book. One of the things I like to request that people do, just to keep it in the community and to keep it old school and mom and pop, is go into your local bookstore and ask them if they're carrying it, and if not, ask them if they would order you a copy. If you're not in a financial position to buy a book, then go into your local library and ask them if they would order a couple of copies to keep there. And it's a way of keeping the book in circulation, getting a wider audience, and connecting in a place that's more about community, like a small bookstore and a library.
Fantastic point, Mickey Z, and we certainly agree with you on that count, whether it's community radio or independent publishers and independent journalism. Certainly like to keep that community going, and it's a very, very important thing. Can you tell people a website specifically, or just find you online?
You know, obviously on all the social media outlets, and I have a blog that goes under Mickey Z Says, S-A-Y-S Says, Mickey Z Says at WordPress, so people can look me up there. I find all the information.
That's great. Mickey Z, you said about a minute or two ago, you were talking about, you know, connecting dots, essentially, and the struggles, how we, in many different social justice movements, there are common threads. Jeff Mackler, one of the many pamphlets you have, Free Palestine. Right, let's connect here. What's going on, say, from Black Lives Matter to Palestinian Lives Matter? Let's riff on that. Talk a little bit about the contents of your pamphlet.
Well, we had 10,000 people out into the streets chanting Free Palestine a few months ago. And now that movement is back in small-scale educational activities, divestment, and other activities. It brought out the Palestinian community, the Arab community, which were essentially majority participants, just like, as you said, in the Black Lives Matter, the victims were in the leadership. The great plurality of the demonstrators across the country in Black Lives Matter were the victims of capitalist racism, oppression, and police murder. This pamphlet, Free Palestine, has two parts. Basically, it describes the horror of the events of the Israeli slaughter in the largest open-air prison in the world, in Gaza. But more important, it describes the context. The corporate media's context is those darn Palestinians have these pea shooters, and they're lobbing these fourth-rate rockets, low-tech rockets into Israel. They're starting another war, and we poor Israelis have to defend ourselves against Palestinian terror. That's the scenario that is the norm in every corporate media in the country and in the Congress of the United States. I have a different scenario. My view is that Israel is a Zionist, colonial, racist, settler state. In the same manner that when you and I were youth, that includes you, Peter, were aware that Rhodesia, British Rhodesia, was a British colony, and that Belgian Congo was a Belgian colony. In fact, all of Africa was divided up by name between the great imperial powers. And we grew up in a national liberation movement struggle in the post-war period, where we said these groups require independence and freedom from colonialism. Well, Palestine, Israel, did not exist prior to 1947 when it was carved up, and 52% of it was gifted to the Israeli people that had been a 10 or 5 or 3% minority for hundreds and hundreds of years. So the Palestinian people simply said, you can't take our land. And when they resisted, within a year, 67%, not 52%, of historic Palestine became Israeli occupied. And today it's probably closer to 90%. The Zionist view is to drive the Palestinians out of their country, either to finance their way to leave permanently and sign a document, or to obliterate the identity of Palestinian people. I don't accept that. I don't recognize the right of any nation to displace, occupy, and establish not only an apartheid regime, because apartheid is disappearing. There are no Palestinians left except in Gaza and the West Bank. So I am for a democratic and secular Palestine with majority rule, including the right of the expelled to return and decide their own future. And in my view, the only way for that future to be secure is to break with the Israeli capitalist state and the pro-capitalist leaders in the PLO and elsewhere, and to build a socialist Palestine where the rule, the norm, is not that Israel becomes essentially the military instrument of the United States government to enforce its will all over the Middle East, but it becomes integrated into a socialist Middle East free from capitalist exploitation, where the free association of people can begin to collectively build a democratic and humanistic and loving and desegregated society.
So obviously a movement both local and global, and certainly connecting dots there from Black Lives Matter to Free Palestine. And you mentioned, of course, occupied territories. And Mickey Z, that's part of the name from the Occupy movement. Tell us a little bit, how is this kind of occupation, the Occupy movement and Occupy this book, different than this other kind of occupation, and what's it calling attention to?
It's interesting because that was a major source of disagreement early on, justifiably so. I like the use of the word occupy in terms of reimagining it, and what gave me comfort, because it's certainly not my place to decide whether or not occupied people will agree or disagree with this, but there's a history, for example, Native Americans taking over Alcatraz Island and calling it an occupation, and the Puerto Rican young lords here in New York City back in the early 70s taking over Lincoln Hospital and calling it an occupation. So if the residents or the descendants of the world's oldest colony, Puerto Rico, are comfortable reclaiming occupy, then I'm going to defer to them and say that this work can work. And I'm happy to see that it seems to have gained a credibility globally from Turkey and other places where occupy has become synonymous with being present in the street and reclaiming public space and not just showing up for one demo or protest and going home. So it's sort of become synonymous with that. So in that sense, it's a successful repurposing of a word, but one that can't ever let us mask what is going on in occupied territories. And theoretically, we're sitting here in the United States, these are occupied territories too. So it's what we're talking about here, to me, is perhaps the most essential work activists can do, is to make these connections and to offer context. You know, when no matter what you're talking about, police brutality, capitalist state, the Israeli bombing of Gaza, these things don't happen in a vacuum. They're all connected as part of the global system, and it's impossible to fully understand these systems if you're just getting your information from the corporate media. And it's our job to provide that context and then trust that our comrades and allies, once they have a little bit more information, will take it and run with it, because it's not up to us to tell anybody what to think. But if we can share information that provides context as to what Gaza is like when Israel isn't bombing it, you know, is 50% of households in Gaza are food insecure? Like, what is life, you know, as Jeff called it, an open-air prison? This isn't just a month or two of bombing and then everything goes back to quote-unquote normal. Normal there is something that we should be addressing 365 days a year. And so it's the job of alternative media, it's the job of activists to make these connections and never stop talking about them.
This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. We'll be back after this musical break. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. We're speaking to authors and activists Jeff Mackler and Mickey Z today about moving from Occupy to a post-capitalist world.
Mickey Z, you mentioned earlier, and Jeff, of course, was talking about the racism that apparent in Palestine and the reality of apartheid there. But you mentioned earlier how Mobilize was mostly whites, young white people all over the country. It certainly was in Sebastopol, where I spent a lot of my time. And then the Black Lives Movement, of course, has been coming out of the Ferguson shooting, but others, Oscar Grant, a variety of others, that is predominantly people of color. And integrating whites in support of Black Lives Matter seems to be an important thing for us to think about. And that is, there's been some groups that have said, well, all lives matter, which seems to me kind of an undermining of the Black Lives Matter movement, where white people should have a Black Lives Matter T-shirt on and express themselves in a very open way as whites and collectively as in terms of the impact that's had on black people, and not just simply say that all lives matter, which they do, but it, in a way it's kind of sets up a dichotomy between whites and blacks. And then you're talking about how Occupy and movements need to address that in a real open way. Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. I don't think it's setting up the dichotomy. It's just playing off an existing dichotomy. Mm-hmm. Just because if you're a white person and you identify as radical and an activist, that doesn't mean that you've surrendered all your privilege and understand what it's like. You can't possibly understand what it's like to be a person of color, a trans person. There's so many oppressed communities within this so-called land of the free that we as white activists desperately need to know when we should stop talking and when we should be listening and to stop talking for people and to stop talking over people. And when the ideal example is what you said, I have over and over again heard, but all lives matter. And the fact that a group of people, white Americans, that whether they're rich or poor, are inherently privileged, can't even for a second recognize the oppression, the institutional repression against people of color, that they have to correct it. No, all lives matter. I find myself over and over saying, you know, if I use the hashtag Black Lives Matter, that doesn't mean only Black Lives Matter. This is, we're addressing something that should have been addressed hundreds of years ago. So it takes a lot of trial and error, and that's the value of face-to-face activism. You can't do this over Facebook. You can't do this in isolation, which is how the system wants us to be. But when you're out in groups of people, in coalitions, people that identify as socialists, anarchists, Democrats, whatever they identify as, that's where you begin to shape a collective vision. That's where you can check each other, and that's where you can find out how to be a better ally for a given movement. I myself, for example, when I'm involved in anything in New York City, you know, they do the hands up, don't shoot. I don't put my hands up if I'm marching, because I walked through New York City my entire life without a fear that a cop's going to shoot me. In fact, as a white activist, I have to antagonize the cops in order to risk arrest or even get their attention, while people of color just have to step out their door, in some cases not even step out their door. So I personally feel very uncomfortable marching with my hands up, because that's not my experience and I don't want to co-opt it. So these are lessons we learn as activists only through interacting face-to-face with fellow activists and listening and learning and communicating and sharing and sometimes arguing and debating and fighting. And that's why people need to get out onto the streets and connect and go to the talks, ask questions in the Q&A. And this to me is the hope, because when you get people together, especially angry people, and begin to hash things out, change is possible.
That's the voice of Mickey Z, author of 12 books, most recently Occupy This Book. We're also joined by Jeff Mackler, author of numerous pamphlets and booklets, Free, Free Palestine. One of them, I'd like to remind you, you're listening to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. Jeff Mackler, let's bring you back in here and remark a little bit on what Mickey Z was talking about.
I think Mickey is grappling with one of the most important questions of our time. And it's the same kind of discussion that took place in my youth in the debates between Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. Malcolm X began as a separatist and ended up by saying, first, blacks have to build their own independent organizations, because historically all of the black civil rights organizations were white-controlled, white-financed, and white-led. And Dr. King led essentially a black movement with white support. In the end, there was a convergence between the two, but they reflected differences in the black community. Black Lives Matter, in my opinion, is a 100% legitimate expression. It doesn't need to be qualified by saying all lives matter, because it is the cry of an oppressed people to say, this is our history. We are the victims of American slavery. We are the poorest, the most exploited, the most imprisoned, the most unemployed. And our lives are taken for granted by this racist system. So I think that Black Lives Matter is something that the entire black community can unite about. And as far as their white allies, that's something different. In the period of Malcolm X, Malcolm led an essentially black movement. What was amazing about this movement was the openness and the willingness of all people to join in solidarity with the blacks. So when we had 8,000 people in Oakland, we had almost 1,000 Asian Americans chanting, arrest, indict, killer cops, the whole system is corrupt, and so on. And then you had Arab Americans, Muslim Americans, Latinos, and all kinds of people, and whites. They were the majority, but the black movement was the central leadership, was the organizers, because it was the issue that touched them more closely. I think that, and of course, as we say, the corporate media immediately jumped into this thing. They brought in the Jesse Jacksons of the world and the Al Sharptons of the world and the NAACPs of the world to say that everything can be solved with reforms. Put some cameras on the police so we can watch what they're doing, as if the cameras are going to make a difference when, as Peter said, the number of blacks killed is almost one every day, if not more. Those are the reported numbers. So I think we're seeing an expression of a deep nationalist, progressive, and revolutionary sentiment on the part of the black community, and an extremely hopeful expression of solidarity by whites. The Pew poll said that 46% of all youth under 30 prefer socialism over capitalism, whereas only 43% of the same category prefer capitalism over socialism. That shows that white youth are learning and coming along. They're not visible yet in organizations, and neither are black youth. They're struggling to find an organizational form that can be long-lasting and permanent. And I can't predict at this point whether it's going to start out by the Black Lives Matter movement seeking deep roots into the black community, organizing on its own, and seeking alliances based on its own independent power with every sort of white and multiracial group for struggles in the future. But I think the movement is extremely promising today, and once again touched on another of the incredible number of issues that are angering and frustrating and moving people into action.
Jeff Mackler, author of several socialist action pamphlets, including Free, Free Palestine. Thank you for joining us on the Project Censored Show today.
Glad to be with you.
Mickey Z, author most recently of Occupy This Book. Last word for you before we wrap it up.
I just want to say that if I was there, I would give Jeff a hug for what he just said. I'm smiling broadly.
We just high-fived him for you.
Because it's so empowering to witness this evolution happening in activism, where it's not the usual suspects co-opting movements, and that the most oppressed communities are stepping up powerfully, articulately, and taking a leadership position. And those of us with activist experience are just lining up saying, what can we do? Well, how can we be a better ally? And that is the most encouraging development that I could have imagined seeing.
Mickey Z, thanks so much for your activism, for your great work, and we will have you back on the Project Censored program sometime soon.
Thank you very much. It was a sincere pleasure to be here.
Thank you. You've been listening to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips.
We want.
That's our program for today. Thanks for joining us. The Project Censored Show airs on 22 stations around the U.S. For more information and to listen to archives of previous shows, go to www.projectcensored.org. Please follow and like us on Facebook. Special thanks to Anthony Fest, our producer. Erica Bridgman is our engineer. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. We'll see you next time.
We want a liberated land, supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, because they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign. It's
That's why you hear the same old things they claim, but change never came. It's a dirty game maintained by rain for capital gain. But my people getting tired of the pain and the shame. We're not commodities or cogs that turn the global economy. We're the promise of a legacy, a spirit we're honoring. An anomaly to those who can't imagine a world without oppressive forces, slavery for almighty dollar bills. We won. We got the love of the brothers and our sisters.
About criminal minds, political ties, habitual eyes, alibis, disguise, another guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burn bright with waves full of poison. Genocide, wars, far for little poison. The weapons manufactured paid for by attacks upon the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons, build the capacity, citizens. And the times for the master thief, combine, conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential. If you ain't at the table, then you're probably on the menu.
We got that love, we flip the brothers in.